What's up, y'all? It's me, Dez, and welcome back to another episode of the Creative Power Hour with my guy, Marcus Whitney. Now, on today's show, Marcus sits down with Marsha Masula, who has helped bring some amazing brands to the city of Nashville, one being the co-founder of Nashville Fashion Week. These two chat about Marsha's childhood, which is truly a story of triumph and very inspirational. Check it out.
This is Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.
Like, you gotta do the work. You gotta show up and just do the work.
Welcome to another episode of the Creative Power Hour. I'm your host, Marcus Whitney, and today my guest is Marsha Masula.
Hey, y'all.
What's up?
And you forgot your new girlfriend. We've got Clementine.
What's up, girl? What's up, girl?
You know, she's wearing her security vest because this is very high profile.
And so this is the first non-human animal that's been on the show. She's amazing. She's so cute.
3.5 pounds of sheer sass.
Well, thank you for bringing her and thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
It has been a minute.
Yeah.
Not that long, though.
But it's
been a minute.
It's been too long for us. We got to be better about that, but I think we all do, right?
Are you doing well?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, I know we're gonna dig into some things, but I'm coming out of something and heading into something, and I'm feeling very good.
Good. I'm in that same place.
So I feel it.
I'm in that same place.
Could we be any more cryptic, by the way?
No. I mean, I do. I try to share all my shit out there, but that's how I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
Heading out of something, heading into something, in that in between, feeling like it is a ooey gooey transformation and just kind of rolling with it .
Yeah. I think people like us are always going to be pivoting or transforming or in transition, whatever the cool word is of the moment. But yeah. I don't feel like we'll ever be happy just completely standing still.
No. And I'm cool with that.
I am too. I'm starting to be cool with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've watched a couple of these.
So I did know
that we start with the origin story.
Yeah, I was telling you, I'm going to love on you here for a minute, that, you know, I was really, really tired the other night, and I was going to just put it on and see how long I was going to get into the couple of episodes, and then I was so just locked in. I couldn't stop listening. I couldn't stop watching, and I watched two people that I actually knew, Libby Calloway and Jacob Jones, or Jonesy, as I like to call him, and, you know, I know these people, and I still, like, when I started listening to their origin, and really just a lot of... just raw, I don't want to say a confession, but just realness from the both of them.
Yeah.
I thought I knew them, and I still do, but it was like I learned something, and it kind of inspired me to be more open about where I came from and what's going on and all that.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah.
So.
With that being said,
here we are.
Yeah, so the origin part was something that honestly scared me because we all come from somewhere, but I've always been... I think private, but also just a little, okay, Mariah Carey, but also a little, I don't know if shame is the word, but just like not ready to kind of share my story with the world. Cause it's very, you know, everybody, I feel very strongly that everybody comes from a sense of adversity. And I've always wanted to be everything to everyone. So where I came from started off when... Hey, my mom and dad got married, and I'm going to put her on the ground really quick. I think she wants to party.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I think when I came into the world as like the first grandchild, there was already just a little bit of unease because it was an interracial marriage. Mm. My father's family has Sicilian roots, and I think they wanted him to marry a really nice Italian girl, and my mother was South Korean. And while they were excited about having... you know, their first grandchild, it was also kind of like, well, she's a girl, number one, which I don't think pleased them. And then also, you know, she's kind of an other. And that was something that I really struggled with, you know, up until recently, because, you know, especially as a kid, you want to be embraced and you want to kind of be like everyone else. So that was already, I mean, even as a child, I sensed the tension with that. And we were military brats. And then we kind of settled in St. Louis, Missouri, which is where I spent the bulk of my childhood.
Which branch of the military?
He was in the Army, in the U.S. Army.
Okay.
So, and I have a younger brother. So we were in like Fort Leonard Wood and Fort Riley and finally settled in St. Louis. Okay. So yeah, go Cards, by the way. And so, you know, that was always kind of weird. And then, you know, this next part, it just, I kind of view things as like before my mom died and then after my mom died. Mm-hmm. She passed away when I was 11 years old to cancer. And that's a really important part of the story because I'll lead into how that continues to be this like lineage in my life. Mm-hmm. And my father was just, I think the easiest and maybe the kindest way of saying it was he was just not a kind man. Mm. I think some of that was kind of an institution of how he grew up. Mm-hmm. And I can recognize that more now that I'm actually a full-fledged adult, you know? Yep. But when you're a kid, you're just, you don't know.
You're subject to.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better. So he was very unkind to me. And this is the part where I think I held a lot of shame. You know, there was physical abuse. There was verbal abuse. And it wasn't something that, it was something that I think the family knew and other people knew, but nobody did anything. Mm. And my brother, while his experience with my father didn't include the type of abuse that I had, I was angry for a long time about that. And now that I'm older, I understand that he still had his experiences. Like, he was still part of that. So it was really scary, to be quite frank. It was frightening, you know? Mm-hmm. It was frightening. I lost my mother. I have a father that was unkind. And from after she passed away when I was 11, it was like, and this again threads through the rest of my life, I went straight into survival mode. Like, how the hell do I get out of this house? How do I become free? How do I become independent? I need to get out of here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that's kind of, it's sad to be 11 years old and to think, you know, survival is not like an option. Like, I have to survive. Yeah. And I'm going to survive. And so I did. Like, I remember moving out practically when I was like 16 years old. I grew up, you know, quickly, and then moved to New York for a brief stint, went to school up there. I went to Parsons. And let me just say this. Everybody knows Parsons now because of Tim Gunn. I'm like, oh, this, I'm like an OG. Like, this is before, this is before Project Runway and Tim Gunn. This was when it was just a real expensive school that you prayed to God, you know, you could use the experience there for a career. And, you know, I was going to study fashion design, and I realized very quickly that, Marsh, and this is like being 17, 18 years old, I'm like, you could either be a really mediocre designer, or you could just own the fact that like you're better versed in other aspects of the industry. Like, yeah. Don't give up the dream of being in fashion, and don't give up this dream, but like, maybe this isn't your forte. So shout out to your other guest, Amanda Valentine, who is actually a fantastic designer, by the way. So I just kind of own that. And then I begrudgingly moved back to St. Louis due to income reasons. And even at that point, it was like, okay, what are you going to do? How are you going to do this? I didn't have the support of my father, who also did not support me going to school. Mm-hmm. And made it very clear, that, and let me, and like, I don't want this to be like the Maury Povich show where I'm just like dogging out my dad, but I do want to like set this tone because it is again lineage to where I am and some of the decisions I've made, good, bad, and different. He was very much of the mindset of, I want you to marry well. Mm-hmm. I want, you know, mm-hmm. babies mm-hmm. and like all of this. And so I mm-hmm. was like, oh, hell to the nizzo. So I went so left on that.
Yeah.
And so it's the idea of me going to a school or, you know, wanting to be an entrepreneur or not wanting to get married when I'm, you know, 20 years old. It was really, to be quite honest, I think a big fuck you to my dad.
Protest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
even when I opened my first business, which was a women's retail store in St. Louis named Missoula, it was, yeah. Okay, you're laughing because you know where this is going, Mr. Whitney.
I know you, so yeah, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it wasn't because I was like, oh, I love my name. It was because, you know, I was my dad would literally repeatedly say to me from a little girl up until I, you know, got the hell out of Dodge, he would say, you're not carrying my last name. You're not going to carry on the Missoula name. And so when those lights went up in the fashion district in St. Louis, I was like, oh, what's that, son? Like, what is that? That looks like Bright Lights Big City. Looks like a last name in Bright Lights. Might not be on a wedding invitation. And while that's funny, like, and I would say up until just a few years ago, that started a trend, which I can look back now and joke about it, but it wasn't healthy because it was like, you know, hashtag daddy issues. But no, it was about, how do I say this? It was about wanting to overachieve and wanting to achieve based off of adversity, which is fine, but based off of like anger and pain.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's an odd concoction. It's a very potent concoction.
It can be a fuel.
It can be a drug.
Yeah.
It can be a drug, you know? And so, yeah. Yeah. So I had the store and, you know, St. Louis was, and still is, I still go back for family. My brother's there with my nephew and I have clients there, but, St. Louis was a great platform for me. I was able to open my store. I was able to style and write for our daily paper. I was able to, like, you know, manage bands if I wanted to. I had so many interests. If I wanted I was on a radio show. It was like, it was such a creative outlet for me. And these were all things that I didn't go to school for. I wasn't a pro. But part of it was luck, but a lot of it was just, like, hustle.
Yeah.
Like, I want these things. These are things I'm passionate about. I'm going to do this, and opportunity presented itself. And one would think that I would stay there because it was like this wonderful creative melting pot for me and my interests. But I felt extremely claustrophobic, especially when I owned a store. I thought, this is my dream. I have designers and fashion weeks and I'm working with people and my dog's in my store and all this stuff. But I had to be tethered to it.
It's four walls.
Have you ever felt that way?
Oh my gosh.
Like, you know, it's like people would come in and they, you know, they would want to see you. If you're not there, guess what? It's not performing. And then you're like, oh dear God, like I have to be here all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The way we design our lives, you know, but that's what youth is for.
Yeah.
It's for going out, doing these things that are awesome and then learning about about some of the unintended consequences of our design decisions, right?
In our dreams,
yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is what you thought you wanted, and now here is the other side of that.
Here is the reality of it. Yeah. And so I felt extremely claustrophobic. I felt a tremendous amount of guilt with that because I was like,
I wanted this. I built this. I should want to be there. What's wrong with me?
Yeah. I'm like 25 years old. I mean, like, how many other 25-year-olds are like, here's my store?
Right.
I had investment into it. You know, I have this wonderful loft that's like three blocks away from my store. And I'm like, that was when iPods like first came out. I was like, I've got the iPod on and the small dog and my coffee on the way. I'm like, this is like this semi-charmed life. And I'm feeling like suffocated.
Yeah.
And so that was really hard. And,
that's really hard at 25. That's really hard. You know, one of the things that I've been, able to relive through my children who are now 20 and 18 is just remembering that at that age, you know, everything is such a big deal because it's such a big percentage of your life.
True.
When you get into your late 30s, your 40s, you know, you've sort of lived two or three of those lives and you're like, oh yeah, two lives ago I did this. But like in the 20s, it's so hard. It's like your identity, it's your armor. But you hate it, you know what I mean? So then you hate yourself, but it's like, oh, it's icky.
We kind of think you're like, oh, I know my shit. I got this.
Totally.
I got this on lockdown. Totally. No, you don't.
Meanwhile, you're melting inside.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you're like, oh God, what have I done? So that happened. And, you know, again, I had kind of mentioned that I was also working on some music projects and my interests were so varied. And so, of course, when I was at the radio station, back then it was the Bonneville Network, I had this, like, radio show with no experience. I started off one day a week, and it was, like, independent bands, emerging music, totally my cup of tea. Uh-huh. And then they were like, the ratings went really well. And so then I was doing it like 5 days a week. So I would be at the shop all day, like peddling these like designer, hey, buy a $600 dress. No. Okay. To, you know, talking to like indie bands at night and playing music. And I was just like high on life and no coke, I swear. But like, you know, it was just like, I felt like it was like
adrenaline. I mean, come on.
And partying and doing all the stuff 20-year-olds do. And, and of course, I met a guy in a band who was on the show. And that's how I ended up in Nashville was, and I want to say this. I didn't like come to Nashville because the guy was in the band and whatever. I actually instigated that.
Okay.
Which was, I think, kind of like my way out. Like, oh, if I'm not going to do this store situation anymore, I got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So we were dating long distance for a few months, like 3 months, let's call it. Oh, hey, let's call it a minute. And then...
What's up, little girl?
Clem's got feedback on that. It's previous doggy daddy. No, we were doing, they played a show here and we were doing a photo shoot. And again, I had never been to Nashville, Tennessee. And I was just like, oh, what is this? Never wanted to move to the South. And after I dropped them off at like the band bus, I was driving back to St. Louis. And all right, you go for it. I just called them on a whim. And I want to say this, I shouldn't say a whim. I've had like 3 or 4 times in my life where I've had this, I don't even want to call it a gut instinct, but this like internal pop where I'm just like, do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
And it's my gut. And so I just picked up the phone after dating him for 3 months, after just 1 weekend in Nashville and not really seeing a ton. And I just said, hey. And he's like, hey, did I forget something? And I said, no, hey, I think we should move to Nashville. And he was like, what? It was like long pause. And I'm like, he's so going to break up with me. I sound like a psycho. We've been together 3 months. And he was like, well, you have this shop. You have this loft that you own. Like, what? And he was kind of living out of a suitcase at that time. And he goes, what? And again, long pause. And I'm like vomiting in my mouth. I'm like, oh, God, he's so cute. It's over. And then he just paused and he goes, okay. And... 3 months later, 3.5 months later, I closed my shop, rented my loft out. This was back in June of 2008. And I moved to Nashville, Tennessee. And it sucked for a few years.
Okay, what year now?
June of 2008. So that was also the year of the economy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that was rough.
That was, you know, I lost my ass on my loft. I ended up having to sell it. And yeah, that was painful. I came to Nashville with like, I own my shop. I went to this school. And not that I thought that it was going to be like easy to find a job, but I'm thinking.
No, but it was the recession. We had the flood in 2 years. I mean, like moving here right then with no connectivity wouldn't have been the easiest thing.
I see the
world.
Pain in your eyes. You feel me.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been the easiest thing in the world.
Well, when you're like in your 20s, you're like, oh, this is going to work out. No, I struggled. You know, he was on the road a ton. I didn't know anybody here but a few people and not well. I had to take, you know, a big financial cut from the business and losing my ass on my loft, and took a big pay cut. And I was just like, I had this like deep, profound fear that, you know, as someone in my 20s, like, oh, you've peaked. Mm-hmm. Like, you made the wrong choice. Like, what was this pop situation in your belly that made you think, like, what the hell were you thinking? You know? And I mean, it was rough. And I will say this, like, I believe this to this day, like, doesn't matter what your resume says in Nashville, because I mean, it was stacked. It matters. I don't mean who you, well, it does matter who you know, but it's like, you got to do the work.
I was going to say, what have you done?
You got to do the
work. What matters here is what have you done?
What have you done and how you do it?
Yeah, and how you do it.
And
yeah.
How you do it.
Yeah.
And back then I didn't have any of that because I didn't at that time do anything. And so, but it was hard. It was hard. And you know, I ended up breaking up with the guy. Sorry. And after that, I just really just started working on things. Like, I worked with a group of guys with the Naked Without Us thing. That used to be like that
music. We talked about that with Amanda.
That's how I met Amanda.
Naked Without Us was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
I came on board and I was like, me and I think Kendall were like the only women that were involved. And so I had the experience and they had the reputation and the credibility in town.
Yeah.
And I had to volunteer. And then at that time, going way back, it was like our little Empire Records. So I got contracted out back in Hillsborough Village before it is as corporate as it is now. I worked at this resale shop and helped them like rebrand, restructure their business. It was called Clothing Exchange. And we had like these misfits that work there, all of these musicians and just really cool artists and creative people. she's flirting with you.
Yeah, she is.
She likes it. That was actually, some would say I took a huge pay cut and it was like, oh, how did you go from like a women's luxury store to working at like this Buffalo Exchange store?
Right, right.
You know what? I met so many people through business, through dating life, through everything, through that. And that's actually how, through Clothing Exchange and Naked Without Us, how I met a small group of people that were starting to talk about Nashville Fashion Week.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, well, who is this chick? What is she doing? And how do we get her involved? Because she's got some experience. So I was kind of like the renegade that nobody knew about. And we got together and we just started doing the work. So this was back in like 2009, 2010.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, oh my gosh. Through all that, and I want to preface by saying this. So Nashville Fashion Week does not pay my bills. It costs me money to do.
Yeah.
I think people hear co-founder and managing partner and they're like, oh, homegirl's like making cash. No.
Yeah. So that's not what I think. What I think is homegirl meaningfully contributed to the culture.
Thanks,
right,
man.
Like that's what I think, right? And that's that, and also I want to ask about Yelp because the first time I heard about you was through Yelp because technology, right?
Right,
like that was my first introduction to you, and then I was like, hold on, she's also doing this Fashion Week thing. That's when I knew you were polymath, and I was like, okay, she's like
a robot.
Yeah,
she's a damn robot. No, so I wanted to point that out because I think, again, like this is Fashion Week is a full-time job. Like we work on it year round.
Yeah.
But back then, here I am, this like, this person that's like trying to like, make a living, make a mark in the community and contribute. But I took on this because I was like, Nashville needs this. And this is before the Nashville we know now.
Totally.
By any means. But it's at the same time, I'm at Clothing Exchange while it was a wealth of experience in meeting people. I'm like, man, this isn't going to pay the bills. Like, I got to figure this out. So even before Yelp, I got offered a job at PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Okay.
And so I was a grassroots campaigner for about a year. And I remember that because off of one of the tours, I went to a McDonald's shareholder meeting. When I came back to Nashville, I was so exhausted from being on the road. And I came back to the Nashville flood starting. And I remember being like, man, it's really raining hard outside. Passed out, woke up, and it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
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 So it hasn't stopped raining yet.
It's raining today. It's raining today. So I did that, and I loved it. I was passionate, which leads into my other animal welfare work, and I've been a vegan for like 11 years. It's very ingrained of who I am, but it killed me because, I was on the road so much and I was like not even in Nashville. So I'm like, I'm not really like, calling Nashville home. And also because it was honestly, it was depressing because I would have to day in, day out, see the atrocities that are happening with animal welfare and abuse and all this stuff. And so I continue to do work with them. I obviously am a huge advocate in other ways, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. Mm-hmm. But I needed to make a move, and I was recruited by Yelp. And I want to say it was like pre-IPO, so it was a very exciting time because it was kind of weird because I was new to Nashville and didn't know what the hell I was doing. And they're like, we want you to be the community manager and ambassador for Nashville. And I'm thinking, oh God, like, I don't even know where to tell people to go eat tacos, you know?
So can I just tell you what it came off like to me?
Yeah.
So first of all, what year was it?
This had to have been, God, when was the flood?
10.
So it was probably like 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the way that it came off to me was, wow, a really big tech brand has a presence here.
Yeah.
And Marsha is their person. And it wasn't like I had no expectation that Yelp was going to hire someone here. I thought you came here.
Oh,
I thought you moved here from wherever as part of Yelp, because like we didn't, like, this was before Google came to town,
right?
We didn't.
I never thought about it that way, Marcus.
We didn't have Uber or Lyft or, you know, Eventbrite, all these other tech brands that have like put Warby Parker. None of that shit had happened yet. So like you and Yelp was like my first like, oh shit, that's kind of cool. I don't know how other people saw it, but that was how I saw it.
That's really interesting because you're obviously of that world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, I will say this, you know, I was with Yelp for 4 years, and to this day, even with some of the brands and people that I work with, or shit, even with Fashion Week, a lot of their practices were so revolutionary at that time, and it wasn't that long ago where they're like, look, we're asking, you know, we're looking at this twofold. We're looking at wanting to get consumers, i.e. Yelpers, integrated and active and build community online. But we also realize that, you know, we have to build community in real life. And then on top of that, like, how do we get the business community engaged, you know, for their monetary reasons, but also engaged with what Yelpers are doing and all of that. And so it was really smart to say, hey, we need to hire these community ambassadors community managers to kind of bring the worlds together. And so, and they did it like in a very succinct way, through events and through content and partnerships. And, you know, I learned so much, and I actually am who I am today with like all the relationships that I have built from that. Because of Yelp, because, you know, while they can get lambasted for bad Yelp reviews
of course,
they were ahead of the game. Like, they were on it. And so, like, I was, you know, this new Nashvillian, awkwardly in my place, launching this, like, major entity. And it was still big before, you know, when it was pre-IPO still. So getting the word out, both consumer-facing and also, you know, business-facing. And then I was help launch some other markets as well, like Memphis and you know, go to other markets to help with events. And I would be in San Francisco. It was their headquarters. They have several now, but was in the Mission District.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an exciting world several times a year. But yeah, it was the perfect gig. You know, I loved connecting with people. I loved creating content. But I did realize very quickly, and I think, and I know they noticed it as well. Through all the Yelp stuff, I love the Yelpers. They threw me a great going away party too. It was fantastic. But I connected with the small business owners.
Yeah.
And I connected with the entrepreneurs more than anything. Like, I was always very passionate about looking out for their back.
Did they replace you?
They did, yeah, with another community manager from another market. He was in a bigger market.
Yeah, because basically, yeah, you already know what I'm about to say.
Throw the shade.
You already know what I'm about to say. Yeah, as soon as you left, it was like Yelp was out.
Yeah, and you know, the company had evolved too. You know, it was a different place, and I will say I was very happy with my negotiations pre-IPO. That was good. That was real good.
Nice.
But it was interesting. It was interesting, and I was thankful for it. We launched like a national campaign here for Yelp Spring Break before we became the woohoo Bachelorette City.
Right.
And it was crazy as a company how, again, this was 2011, 12, 13. Back in even 2014, 2013, Yelp recognized that Nashville was like,
it could see it. They could see it.
The place.
Yeah.
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 It was sexy to them back then. So
smart.
Yeah.
Smart people.
Yeah. So I left Yelp.
Yes.
And then I went to go work for Gannett.
Do you know, I
I am not even fucking kidding me. When I
tell you, like, I swear I think I wiped that from my memory.
I think you, I did too.
I was waiting to hear what you were going to say, and then you said, I was like, oh yeah.
Oh.
I forgot yes. about that. And you did a good job.
Thank you.
Ooh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I'm throwing a little shade. Like,
everyone throws shade on them.
I mean,
everyone throws shade on them. Yeah. It's like they're used to it. They're used to it.
No, here's the thing. The upside of anger. No, just joking. Actually, should that be the book? The upside of anger. It was Knight Stivender brought me on, and I will forever be indebted to her because it was such a cool opportunity. Like, at that point, the Tennessean, Gannett, USA Today Network, whatever they are now, realized that they needed to focus on millennials. And I know we're so sick of that word, and they were a little late to the game, but it was like, we need to like engage because media is changing, consumption is changing. And so she had started a really great initiative there where it was focused on that. And it was like a print magazine and then digital content called 12th and Broad. But it was still kind of like this bastardized project through Gannett that wasn't getting as much support and as many resources. And man, Knight fought for it.
The sad thing is, I think the market really wanted it to be successful.
I agree.
Like that's the saddest thing about it is I think when people saw it, they were like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Let's do this.
That's pretty cool. And then they saw you and Knight, both known entities. And I think, like you for sure, known entity, and Knight seen as one of the good guys. Gal,
yeah,
but like one of the good guys in that machine, and
absolutely.
It's like, okay, let's power do this. Duo, yeah, this is great, this is legit, this could work.
And I learned so much from her, and she gave me such creative rein and freedom, and I brought in a kind of a different, I brought in different ideas and concepts and integrations, and we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. Even again, there was a lot of adversity involved, but then there was a bit of a shakeup. Knight was leaving, and then it was kind of like, okay, what do we do with Marsha? And I will give it to them. They brought me into the newsroom because we were like in this weird, like, I don't know, custodian's closet working away from the newsroom. And everybody's like, what is this thing? But they moved me up to the big leagues. They moved me to the newsroom. And it was still kind of like, who is this person? What are they doing? So I was always kind of in this weird situation, but where I was like isolated with my projects. I was like this mix of, creating content. And then, I was like a creative director. And then I was like, helping them put together events and ideas. I was podcasting. I was doing all these different things, which again, I am thankful for that because I got such a wealth of experience and I got to like feature Nashvillians. I featured you when the soccer club was starting.
We were so grateful for it. That was amazing.
Yeah. And all these different things. So it was really cool, but it was such a weird, isolated experience because I was still so separate. They didn't integrate me into some like major newsroom projects until like my final year there. But I did have the best seat in the house. Like I was like next to Jessica Bliss, who is amazing storyteller.
She's unbelievable.
Jim Myers.
He's unbelievable.
My friendship with Jim is like one of my favorite things from the Tennessean.
Yeah, I mean, you were still there when like all the dope people were there.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brad Schmidt and all these other people. So sure. They were like all there. And it was cool. Like I loved sharing Nashvillian stories and all of that. And we did the Vote Y'all, which you were a part of, getting voters to come out, and did a whole campaign with that. And we'd get into beefs. Like I was very outspoken with other media in town who I've since made up with. But but it was great. And then what, drumroll? I will say this. I've had the luxury from either being an entrepreneur or working for startups like Yelp, where I've never been in the crossfire of layoffs.
Yeah.
And so I remember there was, I think, one round and then a second kind of smaller round of layoffs. And I'm sitting there the entire time and I'm watching the behaviors of the newsroom and people. And I'm just like, oh, dear God, like we're already like,
very bare bones.
Yeah. Like, how are we going to do this? And they were letting go some people that had, first of all, journalism experience. I didn't.
Yeah.
Had, done their time, seniority, and, families to feed and all these other things. And I'm watching the first round and I'm like, okay, I didn't get cut. But I was also just like, what is this? And some of the veterans were like, oh, this is a every year and a half, 2 year thing. Get used to it. And it's like, what? You know, I was a little naive. I'm like, what do you mean? You know? And then there was a smaller second round. And then the third round, I didn't make the cut. And it was myself and it was Jim Myers, actually, which was crazy because I'm sitting there thinking, this is during this kind of like uplift, this like, you know, Nashville going into this like really cool lifestyle, you know, young people, food scene.
Food is kind of right? One of the most important things going on in Nashville.
All
right
these
now.
People are coming in from different cities and you want this
people literally
voice.
Flying in for food.
Right.
Literally.
And lifestyle yes. And young people. And I'm like, and you're letting us to go. And so I hope I'm not sharing too much, Jim. I'm sorry. But it was, you know, it was done and it was very disappointing the way that it was done. And so Jim and I went over to our friend Manit Chauhan's restaurant after we got laid off. And
which was not far. I was like, you could walk there,
hop,
right?
Hop, skip.
Yeah.
And we just popped some champagne, you know, and just started, we started drinking and Manit had our tab and... And then it hit, you know, it hit the Nashville scene that we had gotten laid off. I've never actually like transitioned out of a job or gotten laid off and had
to be
news.
Covered.
Yeah. But I got to tell you, even in that moment of, I don't want to call it shock. I don't even want to call it devastation because part of me was relieved because
yeah.
I was working so much
yeah.
and I felt so awkward. I knew it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And the phones were ringing. At Chauhan, people were like sending us drinks because they saw us check in and they saw our comments and texts. And I just thought, oh, this is going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, this is going to be better than okay. And then shortly after that, you know, I kept thinking, well, maybe I'll move back to New York. I was dating someone at that time and I had a really great job opportunity and wow. I always thought that I would end up in New York. And then I started taking calls. Like when I got laid off, it was the week before Fashion Week. So yeah. I didn't even have time to mourn.
I remember that.
And,
yeah.
And it was weird because all during Fashion Week, people were like, oh, I heard and I'm sorry. Or like, hey, I want to talk to you. I want to meet with you. So it was a lot to be exposed in that way.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have had like shame about it. And I don't really think I did, but it was just like, everybody knows my business. This is weird. Am I going to be okay? Yeah. So I took like a week after Fashion Week and then I started taking calls and emails and I noticed a trend. People were not offering me jobs. They were saying, I want to work with you.
Yeah.
And I was like... Okay. And I actually had a few people say, I want to be your first client. And I'm like, for what? what do you need? You know? And I still had this like, you know, kind of sort of ex-boyfriend in New York and this like solid job opportunity. And again, Marcus, it was that pop in my stomach where I'm like, no. This is the time.
Yeah.
Do the damn thing.
Yeah.
Nashville is it. Like, stick it out.
Yeah.
And I did. And so that's where Roar started, which is my one-woman agency. I'm really bad with delegating, P.S. We need to work on that. But, you know, and I do creative and communications, but really I'm noticing that. And I thought I was going to do PR, and I do a little bit of it, but it's a lot more brand building and strategy.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I'm like...
Not surprising one bit.
Behind the scenes, just...
Not surprising one bit.
Yeah.
That's basically what I would...
Really?
Think. Of course.
It was like a surprise to me.
No,
not at all. I didn't even know that was like a service you offered people, you know?
Nope.
And so it's like, let's do this. And so, you know, fast forward, it's been over a little bit over 2 years. And again, still a one-woman agency. But
so, you know, that's sustainable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's a sustainable model.
Overhead, baby.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I made sure that my place has like an office and like, I've got some, you know, other spaces in town that I work in, but it is, I don't feel confined because I'm not in a space like my old shop. I get to work with already established brands to brands that are, you know, needing to pivot or pivot hard to brands that are starting up. And again, I would say like, 75% of what I do is like strategy and brand building and like digging in deep and ideating, but not just coming up with great brainstorming ideas. Like, how do we get shit done?
Right.
How do we execute?
Right.
How do we make connections? I will say like being a connector is something that comes really natural to me.
Yes.
And this is a way that I can funnel that in a way that benefits brands and people, the people that are behind it. And so, you know, I've had clients that have stayed with me since I started to project-based things and anything from, you know, events and spirits to spirits brands to fashion and lifestyle to food. And it's been really rad because it's like 90% of it are things that I like is part of my lifestyle, whether they're cruelty-free or sustainable or women-owned or inclusive. It's all things that are important to me.
Yep.
And that's like where my portfolio is. And so, yeah, it's been
Can I
crazy.
Ask just a clarifying question about, the agency? So how much of it is about building brand and strategy in the Nashville market versus like national, global, like?
That's a great question. So I think where my sweet spot is I work, so my clients are in Nashville. I have New York, Chicago, St. Louis. But it's a lot of brands reaching out to me on how do we make an impact in Nashville? How do we break into Nashville? It's
going to be such a lucrative space for so long.
I mean,
seriously.
Everybody wants in.
Yeah. And you know what? You have to know it to be able to do that.
Yep.
And there aren't that many people who know it.
It's a chunk. It's definitely a chunk of the business. And then the other, you know, is national stuff.
The reason why I asked is because we've just gone through a list of three brands you've launched here.
That's true.
Right? So that's why for me, I'm like, oh, yeah, you've been all you've been doing is brand building strategy for launching shit in Nashville for the last 10 years. Right? So like, That's an expertise, right? And this market is getting more competitive.
Oh God, yeah.
So it's getting harder. I mean, let me just say, we're launching a professional sports team, and you know, some might think because you're launching a professional sports team, everybody in town knows. No, everybody in town does not know.
Right.
And it doesn't matter that you have commercials and billboards. Everybody in town does not know.
Right.
I run into people all the time, and they're like, is that thing happening?
Yeah.
Are you guys getting a stadium? When are you guys launching?
I'm confused. I'm
like, do you want to come to a game on Saturday?
Right. It's crazy.
You know, so to rise above like what people have going on in their personal lives and then, like, their own little circles. And then their phone.
Yep.
It is hard.
It's really hard.
It's hard.
But I got to tell you, too, the other thing is, like, and I know this comes from your world earlier when we talked about Yelp. It's like, I'm also a mentor at The Wandry as well. At Vanderbilt, which is crazy because my mom was so into education. I would be like, you know, Mom.
That's awesome that you're doing that.
Yeah, it's like, I am mentoring at the Harvard of the South. Like, I don't know if I would have actually gotten in as a student, but now it's like all these geniuses want my advice and it kind of freaks me out. But I've been working a lot in the tech sector. And some of it's going to stay here, but a lot, I should say, some of it has moved, they have moved to other cities like New York, et cetera. But all of them want to launch it in Nashville.
Yeah.
They want it to be their test market. They want it to be their focus group market. And I'm like, well, no shit.
Yeah.
This is the place to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's been, that has been such a joy. It's been a lot. And it's interesting. I love how you're like, oh, I totally see it. I for some reason couldn't see myself. And so now it feels good and it feels natural, but like, I just like to build shit and get shit done. I was telling you that when people ask for my elevator statement, I'm just like, get shit done. That's all
it.
You need to know. What do you need done? How do we get it done? Let's do it efficiently and on the cheap. Let's figure it out.
So let's spend a second and talk about Nashville Fashion Week. Because not only did you launch it, but you've grown the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And it's like on the map, the radar.
Yeah.
People come here for it. It's not just, hey, we'll do our own little fashion week. Like, just talk about that.
Okay, so I kind of had a trippy moment. I was a guest for the first Indiana Fashion Week just a few months ago. Oh, you hear the ambulance.
Yeah.
I was a guest for the first Indiana Fashion Week a couple months ago, and Fern Malice, the creator of New York Fashion Week, was there. And when they would introduce me to people, I'm like, here's the creator of New York Fashion Week. She's become a friend through the years, but she's an actual, like, she's a legend.
Yes.
People were freaking out that I was from Nashville. They're like, oh, Nashville Fashion Week? And I just, it just looks like, again, like, yeah. They're like, well, you guys have been around. Oh.
Oh my gosh. You want to be, you want to be on the show too.
Okay. Hey. Okay.
She's all like, right. Mama, you've been talking for a long time.
Okay, I'll put you on the ground. I'm sorry about that.
She's like, you've been talking for a long time.
You know, that's what happens when you're a single dog mom. They start acting crazy when you're in public. But people were freaking out because they were watching us. They're like, aren't you heading into your 10th year? Or that's really cool that you had Anna Sui there, you know, or, you know, wow. And I just sat there and I was just like, whoa. And the fact that like another fashion week would even want to have, you know, someone represent us there, and the fact that Fern keeps coming back. But you know what? We're really proud. You know, they're Connie Richardson is my fellow co-founder and managing partner, and we are as opposite as we could be. Anyone yeah. that knows us can touch to that. But and we've grown a lot through the years, you know, and we've had conflicts and we've had hugs and we've had, oh my God, how are we going to do this? And we're still standing here 10 years later.
It's unbelievable.
And we're heading into our 10th year. And, you know, we made this statement, and this is a fact. If you look around, a lot of the other fashion weeks in the region and nationally are like either shutting down or they are consolidating their efforts, you know, and for reasons their own. As you know, if it's something's not working, obviously you should alter it or you have to play to your market or whatever reason. I can't speak to that. But we are thriving. Like, we are growing leaps and bounds every year. You know, we've invested nearly $1.5 million into the fashion community and industry.
Wow.
Up on 10 years. Completely volunteer-led, completely volunteer-run. You know, we've had international designers come in. We've had special guests come in. Like, Fern Malice has been a mentor and friend of ours for the last 4 or 5 years. And what really differentiates us is the fact that we have the Nashville Fashion Forward Fund through the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee. Basically, it's like, you know, once a year, if you're, whether you're a stylist or whether you're a photographer or an influencer or designer, whatever it is, model, retail owner, you can apply and we will give you funds to go and have this experiential, like, trip or experience to further grow your business.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had amazing people win it that are now like shooting for Vogue and Oscar de la Renta, or found their investor on their trip that we funded, you know, or just, you know, growing their business and opening up retail stores. We're, you know, I want to say it's because of their hard work and their diligence and tenacity, but to be a small portion of their journey is something that makes it worth it.
The platforms and networks are so important for anyone's success, period. If you don't have them, it's like you got to create your own. You know what I mean? They're necessary. So,
and I think there's a misconception too that Fashion Week is just, you know, runway shows. Most certainly there are runway shows, but, you know, last year we held the first sustainable summit where we led this conversation about, you know, how to manufacture and how to, like, you know, affordably make some changes in your business and what people are doing and what, you know, hurdles we have. And we have learning labs and we have, you know, events for the men. We have a men's style event. We have influencer brunches. We have a gala where we give awards to people that are either, you know, emerging to, you know, people that have been around for 100 plus years, like Levy's. And so it's really a celebration of the fashion community. And it's so much more than a week. You know, it's a year-round initiative. And I'm at a place now, though, where it was all about, we got to start this thing. We got to start this thing. Come on, Connie. We got this. We got this. To now being like, how do we sustain this?
Yeah.
You know, I want to pretend, Connie and I joke that we're going to be like Iris Apple and be like 105 years old with our headsets on. But, you know, it's also about, like, how do we build this so we can sustain it, and what's the succession plan too?
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a reason why I, you know, have a certain lifestyle, because between that and Roar and Tiny But Mighty Fund, there's very little time for much else, you know? So we need to figure that out. And that's where I'm at now. But I will also say, and this isn't just like me, you know, making this up or making this sound all warm and fuzzy, but we couldn't do it without the community. Like, I can't say enough that it's all the generosity of, you know, partners and sponsors and people buying tickets and just being with us, because it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. I don't know. I think I've seen you at a Fashion Week event where I think people, they're like, well, what are you going to wear? I'm like, bags under my eyes and overalls.
I did see you at the 505.
Yeah.
And you were working.
Yeah.
I mean, you looked great.
Headset on.
But
man.
You were working.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I mean, it's like, I literally am on a headset the entire, you know, we get up at like 5 a.m. We have model fittings and calls and 20-hour days and emails and, oh God, there's a fire to be put out. And it's, but I love it. I love it. I was obsessed as a little girl with the Wizard of Oz because of the Great Oz. Like, who's making all this stuff happen?
Yeah.
I like being behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I like being behind
That's
the curtain.
That's great.
Yeah.
Tiny but mighty.
Okay. So the reason we brought our thug dog today, Clementine, Clemmy, C. Murda, as I like to call her, is... I think it goes back again to my childhood. When I started working for PETA, I went vegan. And part of that reason, let me backtrack here. Okay, so I promised myself I would not cry, but this is really hard for me, which leads to kind of where I am now. So I told you my mom died of cancer. I myself, which I don't talk about very often, I've had cancer twice, once in my early 20s and once in my... later 20s. I'm no longer in my 20s. Really scary. Really scary. Especially when you lose the most important, you know, person in your life. The one person that truly loved you and the one person that you felt love from. And then to kind of be an offshoot of that and be like, okay, death is real. You know, am I going to get through this? So I had a lot of support from friends. Obviously, my family wasn't there for my two battles, unfortunately. But I adopted a little dog named Chico back then. And I'll never forget this. I was so ill. My best friend Leanne, who now lives in Chicago, can probably recall some of this. But I was ill, and I was trying to hide it when I was in St. Louis. And I had to have one of my staff run the shop for a few days because I just was going through treatment and I was not okay. And I was in bed and I couldn't get out of bed. I was like sweating and sick, and people were checking on me and I just wasn't responsive because that's healthy. But this little dog, Chico, didn't leave my side. And when I say didn't leave my side, I mean, I didn't get out of bed for like almost 3 days. Didn't go to the bathroom, didn't eat, drink, literally laid next to my sweaty body, and didn't move. And finally, I was taken to the hospital, and in my fit of crazy, I was like, he's coming with me or I'm not fucking going. So my doctor, my specialist at that time was like, just bring this damn chihuahua, let's just do this. But that unconditional love and that loyalty was something that I had never experienced. And I was at one of the most vulnerable times in my life. And here's this little creature that had my back, you know, and it changed my life. It changed my life. And so I have always kind of seen myself as an underdog. You know, I've always seen myself as like someone who I'm tough, but you know, I didn't have someone be a voice for me when I was vulnerable, when I was younger. And so when I think about animals, I think about how vulnerable they are, and especially my dogs, who happen to be kind of on the small side. But I'm going to fight for them. I'm going to be a voice. I'm going to have their back. And so when Chico passed away, about 6 years ago, this love from this little creature was through job changes and moving and boyfriends and sickness and family shit, and like all this was the constant. It hit me like, I lost it. I was not okay. I mean, that's something that I'm starting to recognize, to say it's okay to say, like, I wasn't okay, or I'm not okay. So I go into true Marsha Robot form, and I'm like, oh God, I'm losing it. I need to do something. I need to do something. And so within a few days of him passing, he had congestive heart failure. I was surrounded by love, the community and family. I mean, everybody reached out, and I think they knew without me saying. I started a fundraiser called in his honor, and decided to start the Tiny But Mighty Fund, because it's kind of a double entendre. Like, he was like a little chihuahua with big personality. And I've always seen myself as like small but tough. And our first year we raised, when it's all digital, you know, we had just had people like donate, and we had teams set up, and we raised over almost like $25,000, I believe.
Wow.
In like a short campaign. And it was like what I needed to like not get over him, but to honor him and to move forward, mm-hmm. and also to have like true impact. And so every year since then, in the fall, we start this Nashville's Most Wanted campaign, where it's kind of tongue in cheek. There's so many unwanted dogs and animals out there. And we do this thing where we kind of arrest these dogs. We do this photo shoot where they're like behind bars, and their people, notable Nashvillians, will then have to raise their bail money. And since we've done it 6 years ago, we have raised, you know, I hear you, girl. We've raised like almost $100,000. And we started the Chico Fund in his honor, where we recognize a Nashvillian or an organization each year, and give them an award. And they get to use $1,000 to benefit a nonprofit in the animal welfare and cruelty community. All the other funds we raise go to National Humane, but some of our Chico Award winners have been, you know, Megan Berry, Emmy Lou Harris, Logan Ryan from the Titans, Gentle Barn, you know, Ellie Lax and Jay Wiener. And so it's been like, it's been a wonderful thing. We continue to support other nonprofits. And if, you know, if there's an animal in need, we, you know, will donate funds and do what we can. We're not a rescue. I mean, if I see a dog in need, I'll obviously do it. But we are really good at marketing and promoting and raising money. And so we take those pieces and we help other rescues and organizations of the like mind.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of warm and fuzzy. Clem's in it. Do you have something to say?
Yes, you're talking about me.
Okay.
And all my friends.
Now you put her buddies up to the mic, and she doesn't say a damn thing. All right.
She's like, I sang earlier. Don't put me on the spot.
I mean, she was hitting those notes, man. So yeah, so that, you know, it's kind of crazy because I'm adding all this up. I'm like, okay, like, and I should say this too. On top of that, a big part of like the animal welfare and rescue work is I've been the chairperson for Nashville Humane's Unleashed.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's like, we do like doggy prom and all these different things where it's a sit down dinner with your dog. And we've raised hundreds of thousands of dollars through that. And that's been 10 years. So I'm like, okay, there's been like, it's like sticking with things. Nashville's the one place where it's like, okay, Fashion Week's going into year 10. Unleashed is going to year 10, you know, Tiny But Mighty Fun, year 6 or 7. I don't even know. And it's like, there's stability here. I can't imagine, like, it's tempting sometimes to go anywhere else, because I don't think that I would have the support.
Absolutely.
I don't know. No, I wouldn't. And I don't want to at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll see. We'll see.
So I don't want to ask what's next, because I hope nothing.
No. I know. It's like I'm exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope it's a sabbatical or...
You know, well... Okay. So... I talked about cancer, obviously.
Yes.
I don't have cancer. Let me just say that. It is something that I have been very... I think I'll have fear allocated to that for the rest of my life. But I had some major health stuff happen in the last 15 months, which have been really, really tough to deal with, not just as, you know, an entrepreneur or somebody that's in the community, but personally as a woman. You know, the cancer that I've had before was ovarian. And so I've had some issues with, it's not something that's, you know, people talk about, but with ovarian cysts and things of that nature that really impact a woman's wellness, both mentally and physically. And so I, for the last year and a half, had to really, how do I say this? my entire life, instead of dealing with things from my childhood or trauma, I've just kept myself busy.
Yeah.
Because it was a survival instinct.
Yep.
The last year and a half, I'm doing all this shit still, don't get me wrong, but I really pulled myself out of the game on a lot of things. Like I was forced to slow down because I was hospitalized 11 times. I haven't been well physically. It was a struggle mentally because of hormones and steroids and all this stuff. And so I really struggled with being a woman, being an entrepreneur, being a friend, being a person. And I just had to I had to sit with it for the first time in my life. And that brought up all this other stuff that made my voice crack earlier. And it made me also really look at what's next. It's like I've always, again, wanted to be everything to everyone. And we've had this conversation before, but this phrase really sticks with me. I've always quantified the content of my character through my work. And that's just not enough anymore. And it's hard to say that.
Those are the best words.
It's hard
those
to say that.
Those are the best words, Marcia.
It's hard to say words. That. It's hard to say that. I've worn this armor. You used that word earlier. I've worn this armor, and I realize now it's like, woo child, like you've done some really rad stuff with your career. And, you know, not to say that I don't have more places to go and that I have so much to learn, but it's like, why don't you take some of that energy and like, instead of taking care of all this other stuff in the community and other people, you need to take care of your damn self. And you also need to like put that energy into what makes you happy, whether it's like finding a partner or what does your future family look like, whatever that may be, or what's going to make you happy. You can't lean into your career and these projects because it doesn't matter how many awards you win or how many projects you do or how happy your client is. At the end of the day, just own the fact that like something's missing.
Yeah.
And it's becoming a gaping hole.
Yeah.
And so I think this last bout of dealing with health things and dealing with like, you know, the past and what the future looks like, I'm, you know, I was not okay for 15 months. I could never truly be reclusive, but like I pulled myself out of a lot of things. I went to what I had to, and then I spent a lot of time alone. And that was bad at times, and then it was good at times. And it was, you know, I had this conversation with my doctor. I finally got cleared a clean bill of health like 5 or 6 weeks ago. And he was like, you know, this is something we're going to stay on top of. I feel optimistic. I feel like we're out of the danger zone. But, like, I need you to say that you weren't okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man. He's like doctor filling me right now. But I needed to say that. And so I'm excited. You know, I think normally I would want to talk about, well, this is what's going on with Fashion Week or like this is what's going on with, you know, Roar. But like I'm excited about where I'm going to be moving forward. It's scary, but like it's probably the scariest thing because I'm just like not scared. This scares me. And I'm excited about it, and I feel optimism from it. And I haven't felt optimistic in a long time. Yeah, so, you know, we'll see. I have noticed, it's crazy. Have you ever had this where, I know you've been through a lot in your life as well, and stress and all that, but it's very crazy to me how we think we're fooling people. Like, you're like, I got this. But just in the last few weeks, whether it's a business meeting or seeing a friend, they've been like, what's different? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? They're like, no, there's some zhuzh. There's some woo-woo. Like, what is up? It's like people feel our energy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought that you were like, I mean, fooling like yourself or the world and like.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like, nah.
Oh, yeah. I just thought that shit like 9 months ago. Like this show is like a big part. It's just like, yeah, no, that's over. Yeah, no, I'm.
Yeah,
yeah, no, I'm, yeah. I was running with that armor like hardcore.
Yeah,
hardcore.
Yeah,
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 absolutely.
And it's, I think, you know, again, whether
that's status quo though. That's like
it is.
That's like what we do.
Yeah.
That's like what we. You know what I'm saying? That's
that's what we do. It's what we expect from each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we don't create, we don't encourage or create space for this.
No, you're right.
We don't.
But can I say something? I think I've always wanted to, and you may have experienced this too. Like, I always thought that, like, I don't want to say respect's the word, but I wanted people to just see, like, this end result or, like, the beautiful product or, you know, we did this. But now for me, like, I mean, obviously you still want to make sure things turn out great.
Yeah.
But, like, now for me, I think from this process of me finally saying, you know, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
Instead of, oh, I'm fine. That's great. Oh, no, yeah, my arm's cut off. But no, the bleeding, it's great. You know, I'm fine. No, I don't need that arm. How are you? I think moving forward, not even I think, forget I think. I know moving forward, I want people to know the process. Yeah. I want people, and that's not just for, again, professional, personally. And for me to be able to say, I'm not okay, or you're not okay, or like, let's talk about this. And since I've, again, this is just a new endeavor, since I've started doing that, like, I have felt like closer to people, and I feel like they feel closer to me.
They feel closer to you.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like, I was joking about being a robot earlier. I used to get high when people, like, high off of the fact that people would be like, oh, how do you do it all? You know, like, I'm like, oh, it's magic, or I got it. And now I'm like, no, it's hard, or like, hey, like, I had a really bad day, or I'm really stressed out about this. And I'm not saying we go into, like, Debbie Downer mode.
No, that's not the point.
Yeah.
That's not the point.
Yeah. It's important. It's important.
As a matter of acknowledging practice, because this is a practice.
Yeah.
You did an excellent job on this show.
Oh, thank you.
Very brave.
Thank you.
Very courageous.
Thank you. I know. We touched on a lot. We touched on it a little bit more than I thought I was going to open up to, but this was a safe place. And from, you know, listening and watching your other stories too, this is a real service that you're doing. It really truly is. You know, especially in this world where everything's under filter and I woke up like this and all these other things, you know, it's like, what's real anymore? And it's really hard to kind of pick it out and digest it. And so I think the fact that you're really picking people that come from different walks of life and that have enjoyed successes in their own right, but who are also opening up about failure and personal matters and just scary things, real raw wounds. Because we, again, there's not a person out there that hasn't come from some sense of adversity.
Yes.
You know, some are more, not that you should measure it, but some are extremely profound, and they impact us all in different ways. And so I can't say enough as a friend how, like, you know, proud and thrilled
I know, it feels weird to, like, use that word, but
yeah.
But I think if you're, like, we're friends.
Yeah.
Like, I'm proud of you too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know I don't mean it in a demeaning way. I mean it in, like, a,
it's just
like, I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
it's
know?
Like, it's, there's a word for it, but it's just like,
yeah.
I have so much joy for you that you're doing this.
Right.
And I thank you for, like, letting me share this. And hopefully I don't get any hate mail. If so, direct it to Clementine. but thank you.
Thank you for sharing so much yourself. And this was a special one.
Should we do some whiskey now?
probably not, but we'll do something.
Thank
All right,
you.
Marcia, you're the best. Till next time. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to Marcus Whitney's Audio Universe.